Okay, we're gonna start right away because I'm sure we've got a lot to say and only 15 minutes. So, as before, thank you so much to the organisers for inviting us, and thank you, Evangelos Kanellis, for discussing with me this topic. And the topic is Attica Bank and the transformation and growth story that it's on. And it's already been a popular topic today, and we've already heard from Eleni Virtou a very stirring speech over lunch about the growth story of Attica Bank, and so we're looking forward to hearing even more about it from Vangelis. And so I suppose the first question is, we heard a lot of the story. We heard that you've been involved in the recapitalization, the sale of the NPEs, the merger, and creation of a plan for growth going forward. So you've been quite busy, and I know from preparing this with you that, in fact, that involved no beach trip for you this summer. So I think the question is, which part of it are you most proud of? What do you look back on with most satisfaction?
First of all, thank you for the introduction. Am I being heard?
Okay.
Thank you, Ewan, for the introduction. Apologies for my nervousness. I'm coming from a non-systemic bank, so we're not used to it. So hopefully in the future, we'll do better. I cannot single out one achievement. You've said it all. It's the fact that in the last 2 years we have managed to have an NPE cleanup, the merger, the share capital increase, the privatization of the bank, and that's all too big. And just to give you some context, because I'm running the risk of repeating what our CEO told you before. The NPE cleanup on its own was very steep. We have managed to get the NPE ratio down from 65 or even north of that down to 3%. So it was a 4 billion deleveraging that took place gradually in 2023 with the first outright sale of this non-systemic bank. And then very recently we have signed an NPA with for the sale of two securitizations, which are about to close in the following days. Then we had the merger. I do recall that it was the 18th of July, and everyone was working in the summer in August. You know, there's no August in Greece. Yeah, no one's working then. And we managed to merge the two banks in 40 days or something like that. So that was huge as well. Then the recapitalization itself was 1.2 billion roughly. That took place again back in April of 2023 and this year. Actually, last week. That was concluded last week. And obviously, we're now a private bank and good things are in front of us, I guess.
And it's this privatization that stands out to me. You managed to raise private capital as well to go into the share capital increase. So tell us, what did you promise to get this money?
It's not that we overpromised. We decided to underpromise and overdeliver. And it was not a promise to the investors. It was mostly the fact that 2 years ago, when a group of us joined our CEO in this trip, I would say, we all shared a vision. It was her vision, but we all became a part of it. And it meant that we would create out of a zombie bank, if I may say, and apologies to our CEO, but out of a zombie bank, we have created something that has potential action. Now, in more practical terms, what we're aiming for is to take our 3.4 billion roughly of performing loans and build this up to 10 billion. And you'll say, whoa, that's too big. Our current net credit expansion for 2024 for the two combined banks, that's Attica Bank and Pancreta Bank, will close roughly at 1.2 billion. This means that even though it was a hard year in the sense that we had to do a lot of things at the same time, and there was no dynamic and there was a lot of discussion behind this going on with the bank, whether it's going to succeed or not. And we managed to get a 1.2 billion of net credit expansion. If you just do the math, you see that you easily get to the 10 billion mark in 5 years. Now, That does not, of course, take into account any RPLs. Therefore, we still have deliberately left some wiggle room in there because we don't want to overpromise, as I just said. We want to have the optionality to select different sectors and different segments of the market, and that's what we're planning to do. Then on the deposits, again, sorry if I bored you, but starting from 6 billion, in the next 18 months, you will see that we will grow above 10 billion. And that's just simply by getting our fair market share. And that was not the case in the previous years because we had all those troubles and the problems with our capital, with our NPE ratio being gigantic and all those issues. So if, I mean, we see that the GDP is strong, we see that there's growth. If that keeps, if that is the case in the next years, then I think that it's very much feasible. Then we do have diversification. By 2029, we want more than 20% of our income to come from other sources. And again, you've heard it from the systemic banks, which means that that's a good thing to do. We're struggling to get our bank assurance together. We're investing in asset management, in wealth management. Remember coming from HSBC, which was absorbed by Pancreta Bank a few months ago. Mm-hmm. So we're leveraging on those things as well. And finally, efficiency. Our cost-to-income ratio was horrible, at least. And we're taking this down to 30% in the next 3 to 5 years by doing very simple things. As our CEO mentioned, we're going back to very simple banking because we're too small and it's easy to grow. So in the effectiveness side, in the first 2 weeks post the merger, we have managed to renegotiate a few of the contracts that we've had with our suppliers, and we managed to get 6 to 7 million less OPEX for the bank. That's a huge amount for Attica Bank. It might not impress you that much, but it is. Then again, we're planning of outsourcing our loan administration. That's another thing. We will eventually not have MPEs to service. Therefore, we have people that will become redundant and can be used in other fronts. Again, we hope that the synergies that we will achieve alongside with Pancreta will help us get there in our targets. And I guess that's it. Yeah.
Okay. No, it sounds like an exciting plan. And
is it?
Yeah. Well, it's an ambitious plan for sure. And I do want to talk a bit more about that lending growth and deposits, deposit growth as well. But because I'm a risk guy, and because we've heard a lot of a lot of stories about how big the bank's going to get, how quickly, I still want to ask, you know, what do you think the big risks are around this transformation?
First of all, let me just say that we do acknowledge that there will be risks coming from the integration and the economic cycle and everything. But in order to tackle that, we're investing in streamlining our credit process, and that partly came from the fact that we're trying to integrate our processes with Pancreta's. So that's one. Second thing is that since we will be lending in SMEs and small businesses, I mean SMEs, the way we define it, so we have a segment with a lower turnover, that's called SME for Attica Bank at least. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, we will have bigger numbers, and therefore we need to develop our credit models and improve our analytic skills. And you're helping us on that as well. So yeah, you know. And lastly, we need to make sure that our credit approval process is not being dictated or polluted by our business plan. That's the most important thing. We need to make sure that we are facing actually the reality that we have in front of us rather than the targets that we have set in the business plan.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Understood. So given that you were kind enough to answer my question about risks, I'll let you talk more about growth then. And let's talk just briefly about SMEs, because there's been a couple of mentions of SMEs this afternoon. And as I understand it, the discussion of SMEs doesn't imply that the pillar banks are failing to serve any market. I think it implies that you're detecting something and an operating model that's working for your clients. So can you tell us a bit about what's happening right now and So how you have evidence for the fact that you're able to service these SMEs in a successful way?
Yeah. No. First of all, I've said it again. We've heard it from the systemic ones. It must be true. SMEs, the way we see them, we feel that they're underserved, and that's coming out of the feedback that we get from them, and just that. So the idea is that they do value very highly the responsiveness and the bespoke treatment. I mean, you cannot maintain forever that bespoke and tailor-made service that you have against them, but we're working towards that. So we have decided very early on in this process that the wise thing to do is to keep serving them the way we do now by reallocating resources to the front end rather than to the back office operations and loan admin and everything. And that's why I told you before that it's not only OPEX and cost reduction, but it's the fact that we're going to shift people and literally shift them and take them from the back office to the front office in order to create value for the bank, to create money, to make money for us. That's one. So I think that this is highly valued from the SMEs. And then we do have deposits. I mean, we need to fund it somehow. So we do have the deposit front on the other side. The previous years we had to overpay in order to maintain deposits because the problem with banks closing, it's not capital, it's always funding. Now, we needed to overpay them, so we still believe that we will be more competitive by at least 10 basis points compared to the market. How are we going to fund this? The deposit mix that we had in August, for example, it was something like 75 to 25 term versus sight deposits. Right after the merge, and because Pankreta Bank had a better mix, we landed at 65 to 35 or something like that. This is still very high, and it should be the other way around. So long as we keep switching from the term deposits, the expensive deposits, to the cheap ones, the side ones, we will be making money out of there in order to find those 10 basis points that we will pay in addition to what the market is paying to them. And I think that's quite important.
Okay, fantastic. So you know you're going to pay a little bit more.
We do.
You're going to make the transformation. So, okay, we've only got 2 minutes left, so maybe the last topic that we really need to talk about is technology. We've heard that in the end this is a traditional banking model, but you're still going to invest in changing the technology of the bank, and you must provide a digital service as well. So what's the vision there?
Yeah, we will, but you know, all the digital and AI and all, yeah, I mean, it's great, but we cannot afford it. At least we cannot afford it in this, and we cannot compete in the digital race with systemic banks, that's for sure. They have much more money than us to invest. So when we think of digital, we just believe that we need to make sure that they have the very basic stuff that they need to do from the comfort of their couch or their office for the SBs and the SMEs. So we'll take digital up to a point that we can afford it. And from that point onwards, by paying less, because it's much cheaper to invest in digital for the back office, we were thinking of digitizing our operations. So automation, streamlining, providing a seamless process will allow us actually to give better service to the clients. And that's the way we see digital. I mean, we think that they value much more than digital onboarding, which by the case, we're planning to do that. But we think that they value much more the fact that we come back to their requests in a very timely manner, and that we have the resources there in order to have a conversation with them and have that bespoke service that they're all looking for.
Sounds very pragmatic, and we're on time. So
great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.